Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
KYW Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
I love basketball. You know, after my experience with the coaches that I've had growing up, they were all very positive influences on my life. They were all father figures for me at a certain point in my life. So I wanted to coach because I wanted to be that for somebody else, you know, and I wanted to give back what was given to me.
And our guest this week is Mike Jordan, recently hired as an assistant men's basketball coach at Drexel University, one of the greatest players in the history of the University of Pennsylvania. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate this this opportunity.
So why was the Drexel job the right one at the right time? You had a ton of success on staff at Colgate. Why was this the right time to make this move?
I guess time will tell if it was in fact the right time. It was a very difficult decision to make, just because of my relationship with Matt. You know, I've known him since 96. We've kind of turned this program around up here. You know, the staff that we had is pretty good staff. We had some very good players, relationships, you know, we established. So it was hard. It was hard to leave. But, you know, it just seemed, you know, my wife, she wanted to get back down into the area, be closer to her family, and my family's still down there. And I just think it was the right time, you know. I have aspirations to continue to coach and run my own program one day. And I think, you know, if I can help Drexel, you know, get back to the tournament and help Spike and them continue to push the program in the right direction, and maybe that'll open up some doors.
So what's your earliest memory of basketball? What's the first thing when you think about your life in basketball? What's your first memory?
My first memory of basketball, I'm probably my summer, I'm 12, turning 13, and a friend of mine, Eric Worley, was like, come play with us. We need another guy. And I just remember telling him that I'm not very good at basketball, and because I was a football player. I love football. But they needed an extra guy so they wouldn't forfeit. So I went and played, and then from that day on, I kind of loved it and wanted to get better and wanted to continue at it. So that was my first memory.
So that's relatively late in the game for someone who had the success that you have had on the basketball court. When do you start to realize that, hey, I'm pretty good at this and I'm getting a little more attention than most people?
Probably not for a while. I think because of my name, I had a lot to live up to, so a lot of people never wanted to give me credit anyway. It was like, oh, he's garbage, he's trash. And I really wasn't that good. So I just continued to work and work and work. I would practice with my team. I would practice with the older team. The one thing I could do was play defense, so I kind of hung my hat on that. And, you know, I wanted to go out and I wanted to guard the best player and I wanted to play against the best players all the time to prove myself. So I think once I got to Abington Friends, and also when I started playing down the Sunny Hill League, I started to get a little bit of recognition. I guess that's maybe when it sunk in that, you know, that I was getting better and, you know, and improving as a player.
When do you start to think, hey, you know what, I can take this to college?
Well, I think I got my first letter when I was a sophomore in high school. Yeah, I mean, I got my first letter. And I guess when you start getting the letters, when the letters start coming in, you start to believe that you're a college player. I got a few, you know, early, you know, D3, I think D2 schools, a couple Division I from all over early. And then, you know, as I continued to play more and get more, you know, more exposure, you start to realize, you know, like the guys in your class, hey, he's going here. The older guys that you played against, that you competed against, were getting, you know, going to this school, going to that school. And you start, you know, the coaches start calling you. I think that's when you finally realize, like, okay, I can definitely play at the next level.
When does the University of Pennsylvania come into the picture?
It was funny, actually, because I think Coach Chadwin actually recruited Penn. I had gotten some looks, not a lot of looks in the city, to be honest, in the beginning. See, St. Joe's, you know, Jeff Arnold, and he was recruiting me over there. Drexel was recruiting me because they had Monte Ross was an assistant on staff, and they both were really good friends with the guy who I used to work out with, my mentor, John Harnett. So, you know, they knew who I was early. And then Coach Chadwin actually called Dump, I believe, and was like, why are you not recruiting my boy? And Dump was like, does he have interest in Penn? And I guess that's how that started. And then Dump, you know, recruited me from there. And I didn't, he took over my recruitment as the Penn head coach. So he was pretty much the one who recruited me, you know, from that conversation that Coach Chadwin had with him, because he didn't think I had any interest in going to the Ivy League. But, you know, that was the only Ivy League school to recruit me. And, you know, I ended up there. So it was a good thing that Coach Chadwin did call him, because it all worked out.
So you decided to go to Penn. What's the transition to the college game? And not just, or I shouldn't say to the college game, to college, because not only are you taking a big step athletically, but obviously it's going to be a challenge academically. What were that first couple of months like?
It wasn't that difficult for me, per se, athletically or in the classroom, because I had a pretty good base coming from Abington Friends as far as the classroom goes. Basketball-wise, I was playing against NBA players and overseas players and college players, you know, since I was in the ninth grade. So, you know, all those summer workouts with John Harnett, you know, playing against bigger, stronger, you know, faster, more athletic guys every summer definitely prepared me for college. So the adjustment was, it wasn't that difficult, you know, for me. And then Abington Friends was a very good high school. So academically, you know, I was prepared for the rigors in that aspect, you know.
Do you remember the first moment where you really felt like at Penn, you said the transition wasn't that bad, but there had to be the kind of that first moment where you did something on the court where you were like, this is going to be fun. I'm going to be okay. And we're going to do some things here.
No, not really, man. It was, as I said, like the game, you know, the game is the game. Playing, as I said, playing growing up against my old heads, you know, guys like Alvin Williams, and watching, you know, Jerome Allen and playing against them in the summertime. And, you know, like just those guys, you know, John Haynes, playing against all the tough Philly competition and all the old heads that grew up before me that I learned from and watched. And then when I was able to play against them and just be a sponge and steal stuff from all those guys, you know, the Sean Colsons, the Red Smiths, you know, LeVan Austin, all those guys, Aaron McKee, playing against them and with them and learning from them definitely had me ready for college. And when I first got to Penn, I came off the bench. So I came off the bench my freshman year. So it wasn't like I came in there and I was starting right away and they rolled out the red carpet. You know, everything is earned and dumped. Dump made me work for that starting position, and I ended up winning that halfway through to my freshman year.
What was it like playing for Dump?
It was great. You know, Dump was a lot tougher back then than he is now. He's gotten softer in his old age, but Dump was a great coach, and he demanded that you give your all the time. and he expected that of you. And it didn't matter if you were the number one player on the team or the 15, 16, 17, 18, it didn't matter. He wanted to push you to be the best that you can be. And he not only wanted you to be a good basketball player, but he wanted you to be a good person at the end of the day.
So when you think to your time at Penn, are there one or two games, one or two moments? You had a ton of success. Rookie of the year, three-time, I think, first-team Ivy League player, or first-team Ivy League player of the year. You win a couple Ivy League titles. When you think back to your time, what are the first memories that come rushing back?
The first memory is actually a bad memory that comes running back when I think about it. We were up 33-9 against Princeton my junior year, I believe, at the Palestra. And we ended up losing the game. So, that's the first memory that comes back. I remember it vividly. The crowd was chanting, "You have 6 points or something, 9 points." I remember that chant, 33-9, halftime. And we come out in the second half and we lose. So, that was one of the worst games that in my college career, being up like that and then losing. But then, after that, we ran the table and didn't lose another game until we lost to Florida in the NCAA tournament that year. So, you got to take some good from the bad, and the good from that was we came together and we ran the table. And then after that, that same year, we played Princeton at the end of the year at their place, and the winner goes to the tournament. And we mopped them, on their floor. And, we cut down the nets on their floor and we celebrated on their floor. So, those were the first two memories. And then just winning the championship my senior year is another memory that I'll always cherish. So, that loss, and then later that year winning it on their floor, and it wasn't close. That was great. And then the next year we went undefeated in the league and won the title again. So those back to back, my junior senior years were awesome.
Where do you think you grew the most as a player during your time at Penn? What part of your game do you think made the most progress?
I think I became an overall better player, playing in the style that we played. Dumph gave us a lot of freedom, and he allowed us to make, allowed us to be coaches on the floor. And read and react is what we were taught. Take what the defense gives you. So I think, just becoming an overall player, seeing the floor, recognizing, the mismatch and the holes and things like that. Just the overall, I think I became an overall, just a better player, because being in Philadelphia at Penn, having good coaches, and then the summertime playing against the competition that was around and still learning from, NBA guys and older guys that were playing pro overseas. I think just as a basketball player, you got to be a sponge and soak up all the information you can, because it only makes you better, and just competing every day as hard as you possibly can, and just learning. And I learned a lot from Dumph. I learned a lot, from John Harnett. I learned a lot from everyone that I played against and that I played with. So, you just got to be a sponge and continue to soak up as much information. And I was fortunate enough to have very, very good teammates who were also very cerebral about the game and could read defenses and things like that. So I was very fortunate.
After college, you go on to play pro. You get a couple of opportunities with the couple NBA teams. Then you have a long, successful career in Europe. Talk a little bit about your time as a pro. I think you play on the Summer League for the Sixers and the Celtics in the preseason. Am I correct?
Yeah, I was with the Sixers in the summertime. They were really guard heavy. Kevin Ollie. They had just drafted Speedy Claxton. Ira Bowman. Pepe Sanchez ended up sticking on that team. I didn't get a whole lot of opportunity, but the experience was great. And then I was fortunate enough to get called to vet camp with the Celtics. Myself and Rodney Elliott were the only rookies in camp that year. This was when Patino was still coaching. And it was a great situation for me because, how Patino was coaching, he wanted you to pick guys up. And I was in arguably the best shape of my life. So going into camp, I was pressing Randy Brown and Kenny Anderson all over the place, And then they ended up trading Calvert Chaney for Chris Herron to come back home. And we all know the Chris Herron story and how that played out. So, you know, it was interesting because we took our team to go listen to him talk. And I went up and talked to him afterwards, and I told him, I said, man, you know, imagine if things would have been different if you would have stayed in Denver and Calvert Chaney stayed in Boston. Maybe I would have made that team, and, you know, maybe your life would have been a little bit different as well, because you wouldn't have been back home with those influence. You would have been out there, and we talked about that a little bit. But that was a great experience. I ended up not making it, and then, you know, heading overseas. Actually, after that, it was like I didn't know if I was going to play, because I went over to a team in France. I think it was called Besançon, if I remember correctly. I got there Friday, played Saturday. I was on the first thing smoking back home on Tuesday. You know, so that was how my pro career in Europe started. And I was just like, damn, you know, like, so I'm back home, and there's really not a whole lot of opportunity for me. And I ended up actually helping out coach the JV team at Penn so I can stay in shape and work out, practice with them. And I was working for Keith Weigelt, Professor Weigelt in the Wharton office, so I can make a little bit of money. And I was actually, I was staying at Jeff Owens. He had a fifth year. I was staying on his couch down at Penn just so I could work out and work and stuff down there and stay in shape just in case I got the call. And then a friend of mine was playing over in Germany, TJ Zanin, another guy from just outside the Philly area. He had hit me up and was like, look, this team needs a guard that I'm on. It's not much money, but you can come over and play, help us stay, you know, stay in the league we're in. We don't want to get relegated, and then you can get some film, and then maybe that'll have you something for next season. So I went over there, took the gig, played well, saved the team, kept them up, and then came back home and ended up playing in the IBL with the Trenton Stars. You know, Malik Allen was on that team. Larry Abney was on that team, who's coaching now with the Clippers. Had a pretty good team. And I ended up getting that opportunity because Hank Faulkner, who owns Faulkner Automobiles, I went to high school with his kids. And, you know, I was friends with them. I was friends with his son, Harry. And he knew the owner of the Trenton Stars, and he got me a tryout. And then I played well enough to get the tryout. Jeff Malone was the coach at that time. He got me a tryout, tried out, made the team, ended up playing pretty well. And then I got my first, and then the following summer, I ended up playing in Spain. And from Spain, it just took off.
Now, you ended, am I correct? You played in 9 different countries overseas when it was all said?
Yeah, 9 different countries. I started out in Spain. I played 3.5 years in Germany. It was crazy because I was with the team in Germany. I signed, we were in second division, and we won the league. So I had a rollover contract where they had to bring me back. So then I played for that team for 2 years, and then I signed another 2-year deal to stay with the same team. Halfway through that, through the second year, I had got released from that team, ended up going down to Latvia, playing down there for about probably like a month, and then coming back to Germany to play in Cologne, and we won the championship in Cologne. So after Cologne, I ended up going to Italy. Played in the top division in Italy, in Cantu, which was awesome because every night in Italy, you're playing against top tier guards. You know, Travis Best was over there at the time. Jerome Allen was over there. Tyus Edney was over there. You know, Marco Bellinelli, all those guys. Gallinari, I was playing against all those guys over there. So every night, you know, you got some great competition. After that season, I ended up going over to Belgium. Started the season in Belgium, ended that season in Greece. And then after that year, I started the season out in Israel, but finished the season in Germany. And then I finished my career out playing in Germany.
Was there culture shock every time you went to a different country, or once you kind of got a feel for what overseas basketball was about, the transition from team to team, country to country, got easier and easier?
Yeah, it was... I think it was pretty easy. I'm very fortunate, as I said. Like I went to a school, you know, I went to Abington Friends, I went to Penn, and I was able to be around all different types of people. And I think those two experiences had helped me, you know, adjust to overseas. It's funny because a lot of my overseas friends, they're like, "Yo, you're the most European American that we know," you know, just because I was willing to. Now I should have learned the language a little bit better, than I did. But, you know, I think I pride myself on being able to adapt and fit in, you know, anywhere and be comfortable wherever I am. And that was one of the things also about being over there. It was you had the language barrier and everything like that. But, you know, I think if you're a good person, you can adapt and make friends everywhere you go, and you're able to adjust. And overseas isn't for everybody. A lot of people get over there and they're like, man, I'm done. You know, they play 1 year, or they get over there in half the year and they're just like, you know what, this isn't for me. So, you know, I was fortunate to be able to play as long as I could. And I just went into every situation with an open mind and try to make the best of every situation that I had. You know, I was getting paid to play basketball.
I've heard a lot of interesting stories overseas. Did you have any situations where you were in, you know, sketchy ownership? Is the check going to clear, anything like that? Or were you in most places where it was, you know, you felt pretty confident with everything?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to play on teams where I was going to get my money. You know, the checks were on time, and if not on time, they were just a few days late. So I've always, you know, I've lucked up and been in situations, because I've heard those same stories as well. But I've been very fortunate to the places where I play where, you know, I had always gotten my money on time. You know, a couple spots was a little shaky as far as, you know, the contract, and they would try to, you know, do certain things that weren't in the contract. But overall, my experience over there was very, very positive.
Did you have to adjust your game country to country because of style? Not so much because of, but just because of, you know, how basketball's, what the focus is on Germany, what the focus is in France, or did you pretty much just do what you do and you were able to fit in?
I pretty much just played, you know, did what I did. My first year out there, I really had to adjust. When I was playing in Spain, I really had to adjust because that was my first year really in Europe. And my first game, I traveled six times, you know, so I had to adjust to that. You know, the difference in how they call travels over there to what they call in the States. And then, you know, after I adjusted that, and it took me a year actually to get that, because I had learned how to crossover step when I was in Germany. So I wouldn't get travel when I go, you know, my first step blow by a guy, they wouldn't call travel on me. And it's something little as that you've practiced one way your entire life. And then you go over there and you do it and they call travel on you every single time, you know, so it took some a little adjustment on that. Other than that, it was just a matter of me going out and playing as hard as I can for as long as I can. And, you know, whatever the coach needed, you know what I mean? It changes from team to team, not just country to country. So if you want to continue to play and be on the floor and win, you got to do what the coach asked you to do. I mean, I played for some teams where I come out and I was passing a whole lot, and coach pulled me aside and said, listen, man, I need you to score more. So now I'm like, okay, I'll score more. That's what you want me to do. Some other teams, we had a lot of talent. I was only one basketball. So I you know, I shifted to passing, being a facilitator. So I think not only country to country, I think it's team to team that you're on that you have to adjust. And the guys that can do that, I think, are the guys that play. End up playing for a long time.
Time to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Drexel assistant men's basketball coach Mike Jordan right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Cherry Gregg here. You may know me around town as KYW News Radio's community affairs reporter, but every week I produce and host Flashpoint, a podcast where we highlight the hot topics in Philadelphia, local newsmakers and change makers burning things up in our region. From gerrymandering to gender equality and policing in schools, we'll walk you through the flames on Flashpoint. It's available wherever you downloaded this podcast that you're listening to now. So subscribe. Thanks so much.
And we are back. Our guest this week on One-on-One, Drexel assistant men's basketball coach Mike Jordan. So the playing day's end. Was coaching always something you figured would be a logical next step whenever you were done on the court? Or was it a situation where the career is over as a player and I need to stay close to the game?
I love basketball, and I've always, you know, after my experience with the coaches that I've had growing up, they were all, you know, very positive influences on my life. They were all, you know, father figures for me at a certain point in my life. So I wanted to coach because I wanted to be that for somebody else, you know, and I wanted to give back what was given to me. So coaching was something that I always wanted to do. It just so happened that, you know, Matt had got a job at Colgate. They were there for a year before I retired. And a position opened up, and my firstborn, my daughter Eva, was born. And I was contemplating on if I wanted to go back over or not, or, you know, my money wasn't what I wanted it to be. They did a little documentary over in Germany that painted me in a little bit of a bad light. So there was that marring, you know, my career a little bit. And this opportunity to coach came up, and it was an opportunity to coach right away, meaning I can get out on the floor, I can recruit, I can, you know, do all that right away. I didn't have to go, you know, the Dobo or the video coordinator route and things like that. So at that point, it was like, you know what? It's time to stop playing and start the next chapter of your life. And that was coaching. So I was very grateful, you know, for that opportunity to jump right in and hit the ground running, you know, right away. So it was kind of like a no-brainer to start that point in my career. I stay home with my family, and I get to coach and continue to be around the game and something that I love.
So you're on Matt Langle's staff. How much does being an Ivy League player help you be a coach at a place like Colgate? Because you're dealing with a lot of the same type of kid, the same type of academic challenges the kids will face, and not just kind of knowing how the sausage is made, but also an empathy for what the student athlete's going through. I would imagine that helped a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I think it helped coming from an academic, you know, situation. All of us playing at Penn, majority, three-fifths of our coaching staff playing at an Ivy League institution, knowing the type of kid we have to recruit. You know, knowing the grades and all that stuff like that. So I think it helped making that transition. But, you know, I think anywhere you want to recruit, you want to recruit good kids. You want to recruit, obviously, you need talent to win. So you want to recruit talented, good kids wherever you are. But, you know, knowing the scores and all that things that we need. And you know, myself, like, I know I had to test the bunch of times to get in the Penn, you know what I mean? My ACT score was legit, was high enough to get in, but, you know, my SAT score, I had to take it, you know, three or four times to get the score to get admittance in the Penn. So I understand that. And so I'm all, you know, that I think that, like you said, that helped, you know, as far as recruiting kids and to Colgate, because you don't want to recruit a kid that can't get in the school, and nor do you want to recruit a kid that won't be able to do the schoolwork. Because I think you do yourself a disservice and you do that kid and his family a disservice by, you know, wasting their time and if they can't get in the school. You know what I mean? And so that's the first thing. You want to make sure that the kid can get into school and that the kid will be able to do the work and flourish.
So 8 years at Colgate on staff. When you think of your time there, what are you most proud of, and what are the big memories and lessons you took from that time that you'll take forward?
The most thing I'm proud of is how we changed the program, you know, and we I think we built something that is going to continue to be, to prosper, you know, helping Matt, you know, change the culture and turn the program around, you know. Be honest, we'll call a spade a spade. You know, it's been a long time, you know, and Donald Foyle's not walking through that door anytime soon, you know. And I think that was the last time Colgate was really, really good, is when they had a, you know, the top three, you know, draft pick in O'Donnell Foyle. You know, his last three schools were Colgate, Duke, and Syracuse. You don't see that happening nowadays. So for Matt, you know, to be able to help Matt change the program and change the culture and help, you know, build a winning situation. I'll say, and then help, you know, the kids that we had, you know, grow and be a part of something that they can be proud of, you know, afterwards, and seeing all the alumni come back and be proud of what, you know, you helped, you know, help build is, I think that's special. And that's something that I'll always remember. And, you know, just remembering the look on the staff and on the players' faces when we finally won, and we won. You know, we broke, shattered some records for wins and all that, but, you know, winning, like we were able to play in three straight Patriot League championships. We didn't win them all. We won one out of the three, but, you know, we won the regular season back to back years, you know? So, you know, just looking at the faces and of our staff and our players when we won, you know, that's something I'll remember for a long time.
Favorite part of coaching? What's the most enjoyable part of the experience for you?
The most enjoyable part of the experience for me is the relationships that you build, you know, with the players and fellow coaches in the business. I've got some good friends, and I've met some good friends in the business. And a lot of the guys that I've played with and against, you know, in Europe are now coaching as well. So I'll say the relationships that I've built with our players and with the staff and just with other coaches in the business is something, and being able to give back, you know, to teach and to help these young men develop into better basketball players and also into better men.
And my final question as we wrap up, with the name Michael Jordan as a standout basketball player, what kind of reactions did you get over the years? Did it get tedious when people would make bad puns and stuff like that? Or did you hit a point where you just kind of put it out of your mind?
When I was younger, it used to bother me a little bit. But, you know, I think probably my sophomore year or my junior year in high school, 23 became available. And all my teammates were like, man, you should switch over to 23. You know, you should switch over to 23. So then I started to embrace it a little bit. And the funny thing, I don't know if you remember that ESPN commercial where the white guy walks up and he's trying to make reservations and get a car rental and all that stuff. And he says he's Michael Jordan, and everybody's, you know, disappointed when they see that it's him and not the other Michael Jordan. I'm going to say the other Michael Jordan, because a lot of people say the real Michael Jordan. And I'm like, yo, I'm real. I'm standing right in front of you. I'm just not him, you know. So that was something that always bugged me a little bit when people say, you know, the real Michael Jordan instead of the other. But, you know, if I let it bother me, I'd be out of my mind right now. They probably have to have me in a straitjacket or something like that. So I embraced it. And, you know, you take the good with the bad. But, you know, that commercial, ESPN should have definitely had me for that commercial, because the sheer disappointment on people's faces when, you know, they're expecting Michael Jordan and I show up, and it's just, you know, it's, to me, it's funny because I can, like, I don't think that they realize I can see their disappointment when they see me and not him. So, you know, that was an interesting take on it, and I would just laugh about it and all that. And then, you know, they're all be like, oh, you related? You know, I'm like, no, I wish. You know what I mean? Like, were you named after him? And I'm like, no, you know, I think he was getting cut from his freshman high school team when I was born. So it was just a pure coincidence. You know, you got to have fun with it, because if you don't, it could drive you insane. So, you know, I've embraced it. I wore 23. I had a bald head
probably mostly because male pattern baldness. You know, there's nothing I can do about that.
I feel your pain there.
Yeah, I'm forced to rock the baldy. Luckily, I got a nice shaped head, so it works out. So yeah, I wore 23, and then I had bald head and everything. So you know, I'm just 6 foot version of MJ. That's all.
Mike Jordan, thanks so much for joining me today.
All right, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Drexel men's assistant basketball coach Mike Jordan for being our guest this week. If you like this show, want to help us out, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @1onone_pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.